Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, June 3rd, and June, for the last several years, has been designated by the left, by the woke, as Pride Month. And even though we as Christians have to navigate through the world of the Rainbow Mafia trying to shove this down our throats, we need to take a step back and actually call it out for what it is. Not just utterly, horribly degenerate, but ultimately, as my good friend Steve Dace said yesterday on his program, pride is actually a rival religion. And he's absolutely right. And I would encourage you to listen to his full rant from yesterday's show. Yesterday's show was great in all aspects, so listen to the whole thing, actually. But he made the point that most churches, unfortunately, in America, are refusing to address Pride Month because they don't want to be perceived as hateful, bigoted, or political. And the left has somehow successfully drawn a comparison and a parallel between the whole LGBTQ agenda in the mind of Christians as this is a political construct. We have a flag that's a rainbow, like a nation, and it's somehow political instead of what it actually is, which is a rival religion that seeks to transform the West and ultimately replace and take down Christianity. So Steve joins us now from The Blaze, and you can find his show on The Blaze, on anywhere that you stream podcasts. And Steve, this was a really important point, and I'd love for you to expand on it. And good morning.
Good morning, Jenna. You bet. And I think that ultimately, you know, I use a term du jour on my show that's, you know, just plagiarized right out of the Bible, the spirit of the age. And in every era of the church, and really of human existence, going all the way back to even the antediluvian pre-Noahic flood era, there is a spirit of the age. And it's essentially, what is the zeitgeist of fallen humanity? What's the ecosystem of it? What's the natural habitat of it? Pardon me. What are its symbols? What are its traditions? What are its customs that are essentially manifestations of the gods of this world, the false gods of this world, the demons of this world? And in our time, this is often the chief spirit of the age manifestation. You know, you used a term a few minutes ago, wokeism. I mean, there are denominations within the spirit of the age, just as there are within, you know, within the Christian church, now, albeit for different reasons. I mean, Christian churches have denominations mainly because they're trying to argue with one another what they believe is the best form of orthodoxy and or righteousness. And in the case of the spirit of the age, the denominations are twin deceptions all coming from the same source. And sometimes this isn't recognized because they appear to be at odds or in conflict with one another. Like when you hear people say things like, and a lot of the people in my line of work will say stuff like this every day. There's queers for Palestine. Have you tried being a queer in Palestine? You guys know what they do to people like you over there, okay? As if you somehow have a better idea of what the rainbow jihad is after than they are. Or maybe you've heard this as a woman a lot these days. Well, you know, where are all the feminists who supposedly care about women, as men are replacing all the women, okay? As if you've, again, figured out the scheme And then we stand back as conservatives, like, yeah, we got you in your hypocrisy. And then for the last 40 years, we're like, how come they don't care that they're hypocrites? Because they're not in their worldview. Because ultimately, these are all demonic manifestations, and demonic manifestations are for two simple goals: power and control. Whatever grants the spirit of the age more power and more control, it is for. And it has always been this way. If you go back to Ephesus, so we're going back 2,000 years almost now. All right, Paul was a unique threat to that community. He faced a unique amount of civic opposition to his evangelistic crusades there that moved even beyond the spiritual opposition he faced everywhere else that he went. Why? Because the spirit of the age, the worship of Artemis, of Diana, was so entrenched in the culture there, Jenna, that it literally was the fabric of their civil order. It was how they conducted civic affairs. It was the basis of their economy. They recognized here that what Paul represented was a rival ecosystem, a rival way of life. Everything would change if this tent maker from this Jewish tent maker that somehow acquired Roman citizenship so he could go to a place like Ephesus. If what he was preaching took hold, established a beachhead in the culture there and grew, it would undo their entire civil order. In other words, it would take away their power and their control. All right. Everything on this side of eternity is a battle for dominion. From Joshua saying, choose ye this day whom you will serve. Okay. From Jesus saying, why do you call me Lord if you do not do what I say? From Jesus saying in Revelation 3, I am the ruler of God's creation. From Jesus saying in his Great Commission, all authority under heaven and earth has been granted to me. From the enemy saying to Christ, I can give you the kingdoms of this world, because he could. Everything is a battle of dominion. This takes place in the home. I will put enmity between you and the woman. And we have concocted this sort of 21st century monasticism within evangelicalism. This idea we can build these Pottery Barn sprawling campuses that are multi-acreages right in the middle of a community called the suburb. And we can be right planted in the middle of it and not be in the middle of it. And you drive by these buildings that, you know, today is Tuesday. Drive by most of your local mega churches today at 1 o'clock. And there might be a guy mowing the lawn, and that's about it. Okay. What's it doing the rest of the day? It's not a hub for the community. It's not a receptor for people, except for, you know, the handful of services where we make sure the sermon is 28 minutes on the nose after four perfectly executed worship songs. So you've got time to get your kids in and out. Meanwhile, the tumor called the spirit of the age metastasizes. And so the same thing that produces Palestine, a make-believe place that originated as a troll by a godless Roman emperor to troll the Jews, created the name. That's the origin of it. It's been a make-believe place for two millennia. All right, the make-believe marriage, make-believe. But that's because we, according to our worldview, think we have a claim on reality. So do they. So one of us is living, to quote Stranger Things here, one of us is living in the upside down. And that's why these two worldviews cannot be reconciled. They're incontrovertible. We are in the midst of a worldview steel cage match, Jenna. Two men have entered. Only one man's walking out. Okay, only one worldview is walking out of there. All right? And unfortunately, we have gone through an entire generation where organizations like AFA have essentially, as parachurch organizations, been asked. I mean, when Don Wildman started your organization a generation ago, he was the downstream receptor of the discipleship being done in the churches. All right. The churches did their job. And then people were like, okay, how do we mobilize based off of what we've just been properly taught, discipled, and catechized? Where do we go? All right. And they were sent downstream to organizations like AFA, what has to happen now, because we've now traded in, elders for boards of directors, and creeds for mission statements, And we've traded in the Word of God and discipleship for church growth consultants. But we all have skinny jeans, pleated khakis, Hawaiian shirts, and sweater vests. What has to happen now is his son, Tim Wildman, has to actually do the biblical discipleship now. Organizations like AFA are now being asked to step in and replace an entire generation of lost discipleship while we chased after church growth rather than the Great Commission. And that loss of ground, okay, in which you've seen in its place, you've seen the spirit of the age surge and take the church's place of prominence in most of these community vigils, to the point now that pride with six rainbow colors instead of seven, and the root of all sin is pride, it now gets the largest civic reckoning. Now, it was muted last year. It's even more muted this year, so those are good signs. But prior to that, there was more recognition of pride in our civic institutions, including the raising of flags over embassies and government buildings, than there was for Christmas, okay? And that is a sign you've been conquered. That is the spirit of the age. That is hell. Just like any other conqueror, you raise your banner over the flag of the people whom you've just defeated. That's what that was about. It was a sign. It was to send to believers, you bow the knee. You've been defeated. And unfortunately, too many of us have.
And so well said, Steve Dace. And you're absolutely right that the modern churches in America are failing to catechize, to disciple, and to teach, and to fulfill the Great Commission. And I get comments all the time, like I know that you do as well, from listeners that say,
I guess what you're going to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't I hear this in church, right? Yes. Why don't I hear this in church? Is that what they're going to tell you? Yeah.
Yeah. And that you preach more of the Bible and connect the dots more to the Christian life on your radio program than I hear often from church. And that is shameful, quite honestly.
That is the reason
that all of our political sphere is in shambles right now, that the church is not the center. The biblical worldview, the church, the people of God, the church, are not the center of the community, and moving our culture forward into more righteousness, building a more perfect union. And instead, we are having to clash with a culture that doesn't even know how off it is.
Right. Well, I mean, we're sitting here, and this is, serendipitous, providential, sad, tragic irony. But arguably the greatest theologian that the UK has produced in the last generation is N.T. Wright. And in the last 24 hours, I mean, this guy's so old, Jenna, he ain't buying green bananas, okay? This ain't his first lap around the track here, sister, okay? He's on the last lap. And on his last lap, he did an interview where videos are going around. They're in my X feed. You can go see him yourself at Steve Dace Show on X, formerly known as Twitter. He's on X now, or he's in this interview saying, well, if the kid's conceived in rape and incest, you can murder it. Probably need to discuss that. So we're pro-infanticide on the way out the door now. By the way, Chuck Smith, the founder of the Calvary Chapel movement, which has produced so many great churches, by the way, he did the same thing on his radio show at the end of his ministerial career. He counseled a woman on his show that if she had conceived in rape or incest, she could abort her kid. I played the clip on my show at the time. And then N.T. Wright even went further. He's now saying you don't even have to believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus to be a Christian. These are not things that occur. When you know what N.T. Wright knows, and you have done this for as long as he has, this what's happened here is either A, you were just a really deceptive, false teacher all along and are waiting till now to reveal that, which is highly unlikely in his case or in Chuck Smith's case. What's way more likely is you stayed for too long and you've just been browbeaten by the spirit of the age. And there's always a common denominator here, okay? It's what my colleague Ali Stuckey and Joe Rigney have coined this phrase, toxic empathy, okay? And so in N.T. Wright's case, he says, well, I had this friend of mine, Marcus Berg, with the Jesus Seminar. For your listeners that don't know what the Jesus Seminar was, the Jesus Seminar was formed in the 90s, a group of heretics, essentially, Ivy League heretics, who decided they were just going to anoint themselves as their own conclave and they got together to decide which parts of the Bible were true and which parts weren't. They were appointed to edit the Bible, and they decided, and they came up with this phrase that sometimes it's known today as red letter Christians. Right, if it wasn't in red letters, then it wasn't actually part of the Bible. They just gave themselves the authority, gave themselves the power. Nobody asked for this, and thought they were just going to undo, you know, 1,800 years of canon. And that's who N.T. Wright is talking about. Well, he was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine, and so I thought he was a good guy. He didn't believe in the bodily origin. He must be a Christian. This is what Darwin said. Darwin called Christianity, quote, a damnable doctrine, end quote, because if it's true, it means that a lot of people he cares about went to hell because they don't believe in Jesus. You see what happens here. You put yourself via toxic empathy in the place of truth, that you are the arbiter of truth. Your emotion is, your experience is, your preferences are. I mean, we can just get to the root of it here and say what you're really saying. Ye be like God. That's what you're really saying. Ye be like God. Well, let me say this to everybody in your audience, because this stuff can seep in even to an audience like this too. Your gay brother isn't the alpha and omega of your theology. And if you're willing to grant him accommodations, that if he had raped somebody, if he had stolen from somebody, well, you know, my brother's a kleptomaniac, he can't help himself, so maybe a commandment against stealing is just null and void, so I can maintain a relationship with my brother. All right, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. And you're in danger of letting toxic empathy put you into false teaching and not finishing your race well. And that's what happened to N.T. Wright. Look what happened to the Scottish preacher whose name escapes me 2 years ago. Decades and decades of faithful preaching, and then decides, he tells people they should, if they really care about the person, they should go to their gay wedding. No.
Alistair Begg. They shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. No, you should not, and not ever. No. And let me just tell you, I take these things, I'm going to be 52 here in a month and a half, And I take these things as cautionary tales for me, because what I see throughout the scriptures, and I see just in my own, the time in which I live, is men who were once great just don't finish well. This happens a lot. And so part of my daily prayer is, you know, let me finish well. I mean, my son just graduated from high school. And I mean, I covenanted with him, and I put it on video, and I said, brother, I'm doing this. Because we're still father and son, but ultimately we're going to be brothers in heaven. And I'm covenanting with you right now as the man who will take my place as the head of this family. I will finish well. Hold me accountable to that. And I think too many men do not finish well. I think this is, every generation has unique challenges. I think, frankly, in the boomer generation, this is a unique challenge, because they're going to live the longest and the healthiest of any generation, really, since the antediluvian era. All right, our average lifespan's nearly 80. You know, people, I'm healthier right now at going on 52 than I was at 42. I'm thinner, I'm more athletic, I have more endurance. So I think that this grants us a level of vanity to hang around and hang around and hang around and hang around and not anoint successors, not have lines of succession. Make it seem as if, well, if you retire and you go away, the whole thing will fall apart. It's all on you. And then that's one step away from it's all about you. Okay. You know, there's a lot of people in this audience that probably went and saw Mick Jagger when they were kids and enjoyed the Rolling Stones in the 60s and 70s, but then they grew up and they moved on. Folks, the Rolling Stones at age literal 90 are going back on tour later this year. Okay. I think uniquely in this generation, it's really struggling in the boomer generation to finish well, because they're not having chest grabbers at 55 like previous chain smoking generations did. And so there are guys, I mean, you look at David Jeremiah. I mean, he is still preaching strong. Well, like, what is he, 80? I did an interview. I did an interview this week with Newt Gingrich for an hour and a half. He was 81 years old. People think I'm pretty smart. I had to sprint to mentally keep up with him. And so I think this generation is getting to live longer and better than any human generation has in thousands of years. And that's great, but guard your vanity. Make sure you don't ever think that you just have to hold on. You have to cling. You have to be here to the end, okay? Because it's all about you. That is a sure sign you will not finish your race well. And it's always better to die the hero than live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That's a shot across N.T. Wright's bow. Mm.
And we've got a break here, Steve Dace, but there's so much more that could be said, and I know that you'll come back on the program to say it, and I appreciate it so much because we have to address these things head on, and we can't simply say that, you know, Pride Month is something that we can coexist with or that we just have to fight on the playing field or the level of it being a cultural battle or a political battle or something that we just, you know, boycott at the big box department stores. This is ultimately something that will ruin a nation, ruin families, ruin the church, ruin the foundation of truth that we are supposed to preach and be committed to and fulfill the Great Commission if we are not focused on simply being faithful to our calling. And that is such an excellent point that we have to remember is to continue to run our race with endurance and finish well. We'll be right back with more. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence and often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now are lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother as well. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, let's now turn to Israel. And Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana had an opportunity to visit Israel last week and actually meet with leaders, Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So he joins us now. And good morning, Representative Stutzman. And where in Israel did you get to visit and the purpose of this trip?
Well, good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you. Yeah, it was, again, a wonderful trip to Israel. This time, you know, I've been there before, but this time being there under the conditions of war in Gaza. So we visited, of course, Jerusalem is where we stayed, but went down to the Gaza Strip. And it was just one of those trips, again, where you just walk away and you think, you know, it's so sad that people are still hating each other, killing each other in 2025, and the attack that Hamas orchestrated on Israel back in on October 7th, 2023 it was horrific to actually see how it all happened. And I think I may have gotten that wrong. I think it's 2024. I think we're coming up on 600 days now. So it's been over 600 days since the attack happened. So it was 2023. And they're counting down every day. As I just mentioned, while we were there, it was 600 days, and there were still hostages that Hamas had were holding hostage in the tunnel system in Gaza. And that's what I learned as well, is this tunnel system that Hamas has built. It's very sophisticated. It's not a subway system, but it's as dug out as big as a subway system, like the city of London is how they described it, you know, where they drive Hummers down there, vehicles down there. They live down there. It's an underground city, and Hamas is hiding behind the citizens of Gaza. And that's what I heard from the soldiers. I mean, this was soldiers on the ground in Gaza that shared with us how they feel so bad for the citizens there, the Gazans that live there, because they're human shields for Hamas. And, you know, Hamas is running around the Middle East. Maybe they're staying in nice hotels in Qatar, the leaders there, and, you know, they're funneling money from Iran and Qatar back to their operations in Gaza to fight the Israelis. And so I support Israel 100%. After leaving there and seeing what has happened and hearing the stories, we've got to continue to stand with Israel and extinguish this sort of hatred and crazy of a mindset that, you know, if you disagree with somebody, you just go kill them.
And we're seeing not only the horrific attack on October 7th of 2023 and all of the anti-Semitism that has followed that and become even more and more evident, but just on Sunday, there was another terror attack in Boulder, Colorado, with an illegal that, you know, is yelling Free Palestine. And then this comes as Pennsylvania governor, who's Jewish, Josh Shapiro's home was attacked within the last couple of months. And then two embassy workers were brutally murdered outside of a museum in D.C. I mean, all of these things that are happening here in America, I think, are evidencing why America needs to support Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anti-Semitism is a cancer that is starting to metastasize here. And we're seeing it, you know, in Boulder. We're seeing it right here in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, where two young Israeli diplomats were shot on the street by, you know, a man who was yelling Free Palestine. They're becoming more bold with their hatred towards the Jewish people here in America. And so this has been going on for quite some time. And this is one of the things that I learned while in Israel, talking with Prime Minister Netanyahu and other Jewish leaders, is that, and we've known this for a while, but, you know, Iran is always the one that gets the most attention for sponsoring terrorism around the Middle East and in other places. But Qatar is also a country that we need to ask more questions about, because they're not part of the Abraham Accords, which I think is interesting. They have billions and billions of dollars of money. I mean, they're just loaded. They play both sides. You know, we have a military base in Qatar. They've been good to us. But on the other hand, what I've heard over the last week is that there's a lot of money being funneled through Qatar to terrorist organizations. And I think that Congress needs to act and ask questions. We cannot allow someone who's going to pretend to be an ally to also be supporting any sort of operations, just period. And so that was one of the highlights, I think, that I left Israel with, is that we need to be asking questions around Qatar and what their intentions are, what their operations are. We've got other good allies in the Middle East outside of Israel, Saudi Arabia, UAE. In fact, UAE, you know, incredibly has freedom of religion, even though it's, you know, predominantly Muslim. There's freedom of religion there, and the Israelis are very friendly with the Emiratis and with the Saudis as well. And there's also an opportunity with the Syrians. So there's good things happening there. But I wanted to tell you this too, Jenna, because I heard a little bit about the border this morning. Our southern border, the southern border of Israel, was so soft. There was a fence there. There was a military base there, but there were no walls. There were no concrete barriers. And Hamas just simply cut through the fence, ran through the border, and attacked Israel on October 7th. And that goes to show, again, if you don't secure the border, if you don't have a border, that bad people will eventually take advantage of it, and they'll sucker punch their enemies. And so, and then when we counter punch, which Israel is doing, and rightly so, then all of a sudden now we got the New York Times and Washington Post saying that Israel is performing some sort of genocidal response, which is ridiculous. But that's why a border matters. And the Israelis were trusting of the Gazans. 18,000 people were going back and forth over the border daily. And that was one of the things I heard from some of the folks at the kibbutz, is that they felt betrayed by the Gazans, that they actually were going back and, you know, informing the Gazans on where people live, where the armory was, where, you know, places were inside the kibbutz and other places. When they would attack, they could go straight to those places. So that's why a secure border really does matter.
I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana about his Israel trip and meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu and other Israeli national leaders. And did Iran come up as well in that conversation when you're talking about, you know, other Middle Eastern actors and how Israel and also the United States needs to view this?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu, that was his number one concern before, you know, even Qatar, the, you know, of course, the hostages is at the top of his mind. But Iran was brought up in the fact that they are, you know, trying to develop a nuclear program. Here's the thing, Jenna, they just simply can't have a nuclear program at all. I mean, not for utilities, not for, you know, the Iranian people, because Iran has proven over and over that they can't be trusted and that they don't deserve a nuclear program. They have plenty of oil. They've got plenty of gas. They can use that for their utility purposes. But you know, not only Israel, but also if Iran would get a nuclear program, the Saudis would be in danger, the Turks would be in danger, the Middle East would be in danger, the whole world would be in danger if the Iranians had a nuclear program. And Austria just reported recently that they have intelligence that Iran is developing a nuclear program, and so it needs to be stopped. It just, they simply cannot be allowed to have any sort of nuclear capability.
Yeah, absolutely. And so overall, with this meeting, was this just you and a few others, or what, other members of Congress, or how did this relate overall to where Congress is viewing how the United States needs to support Israel?
Yeah. So Congressman Andrew Clyde from Georgia and I were the two on the trip. There were other members of Congress there. Over the last week as well, we saw Senator Lankford there and a couple of other Democrats were there as well, which I was glad to see, because this has to be a bipartisan support for Israel. In fact, you know, I saw this forum yesterday where, of all people, you know, that we didn't expect to have the support from, and just using some common sense, was the senator from Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, who's going against the Democrat Party. And he's having to do it in such a public way because the Democrat Party has just doubled down on this, you know, they're so soft and weak on opposing anti-Semitism. They're, of course, doubling down and wanting to support boys in girls' sports, which, again, you know, we have to fight for the girls again after what the Democrat governors around the country have allowed for boys to be competing with girls in track events. We saw this past couple weeks. But it's good to see other members from the Democrat Party there to see it, because I tell you, once you're there and you hear from the Israelis, they're so concerned about the hostages. They're all standing together, you know, wanting the hostages released. Prime Minister Netanyahu and the American government work hand in hand. We met with Ambassador Mike Huckabee, which I'm so thankful that he's our ambassador to Israel, and he and Prime Minister Netanyahu worked daily to get the hostages released. They made a change with the humanitarian aid, because what Hamas does is they take the humanitarian aid that's for the people and they go sell it, and that's how they fund their war machine. And so, you know, they're living under threat every day. In fact, we had to hit the bomb shelters a couple of times because of incoming missiles from the Houthis down in Yemen. So Israel is, it's incredible that they live day to day going about their normal lives, and all of a sudden they got to run to the bomb shelter for 15, 20 minutes, and then they go back to their work. But it's such an important time for us to be standing and supporting Israel right now.
Absolutely. And that actually surprises me. And it's a good surprise that that Democrats are there, and there are a few like Senator Fetterman that are willing to kind of go against the grain and stand up for some good things and some good policy. And we should applaud that, of course. And so is there any discussion of maybe some bipartisan legislation or resolutions or anything coming out of Congress?
Yeah, we actually had a really good conversation about that. And we're going to be back in session today. And I want to speak with, you know, the speaker and the Republican leadership about a couple of ideas on resolutions supporting Israel, because, for one, you know, we always hear about the West Bank. Well, the West Bank is not just the West Bank of the Jordan River. They've now included all of Judea and Samaria into that that description of the West Bank. So we've stopped saying the West Bank because their definition is that it's taking over almost half of the nation of Israel in Judea and Samaria. So we believe that Israel has to have sovereignty over Judea and Samaria. And then, you know, beyond that, and this will take a little bit of time when the Gaza war is over with. But my belief is that the Gazans have to, the Gaza Strip needs to be under the sovereignty of Israel. They have proven over and over again that the Palestinians have proven they cannot have the Gaza Strip without lobbing rockets and using it as a war zone against Israel. And if you look at the map, there's a little notch that goes right up along the Mediterranean towards Jerusalem and towards Tel Aviv. That's the Gaza Strip. And if they're going to use that as a launching pad against Israel, that needs to stop. So the Israelis gave the sovereignty back to the Palestinians to try to solve peace in the Middle East, and gave the Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians, and this is what the result is. And so they have shown that they can't do it. When the Palestinians took over Gaza in 68, on their flag, it said, "We kill Jews on Saturday, we kill Christians on Sunday," and that's just not allowed. We can't have that sort of hatred in the world, and especially in Israel. So my hope is that we put together some resolutions addressing those particular issues on the sovereignty, giving Israel control over those areas, because they're the ones that are proving over and over again that they can treat people fairly, and there's truly law that they follow. Whether you're Arab, whether you're Jewish, American, it doesn't matter. They treat people fairly, and that's what we need there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Congressman Marlon Stutzman, for your dedication to this issue. And we'll look forward to those resolutions hopefully coming out of Congress. And for everyone listening, this is your opportunity to call your members and especially the Speaker's office as well, and encourage them to support these kinds of moves. And we need to be standing up for the truth, which it definitely includes supporting Israel in these ways. So Congressman Marlon Stutzman, always a pleasure when you drop by, and you can follow him at Rep Stutzman on X, Instagram, Truth Social, and Facebook. So make sure you're following there to find out all of the updates from him in Congress. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, Polish nationalist Naraki wins the presidency in a setback for pro-EU government. This coming from Reuters. And he narrowly defeated the liberal Warsaw mayor opponent with just 50.89% of the vote. And the nationalist opposition candidate narrowly won that presidential election, results showed on Monday, delivering a big blow to the centrist government's efforts to cement Warsaw's pro-European orientation in a victory for European conservatives inspired by U.S. President Donald Trump. Naraki secured that vote, the Election Commission data showed, and the outcome Pre-stages more political gridlock as he is likely to use his presidential veto to thwart the prime minister's liberal policy agenda. So how is this influencing not only Poland, but the EU and European politics? And where is the United States in all this? Well, let's welcome in Matt Tiermand, who is a journalist and political strategist and was just recently over at CPAC Poland. So, Matt, what do we need to know about this election?
Well, first, it's great news for conservatives around the world. Poland, for the last 20 years, along with other Central European post-communist nations, was a bulwark against the growth of globalist supranational governance, the EU, the UN, the WTO, the WHO. They know what being ruled by far-off mandarins, for them 50 years being ruled by Moscow, they know what that looks like. And so even though they wanted EU ascension in 2001, especially for the trade union, the Federated Trade Union that was the European Monetary Union, good free movement of goods, services, people, and capital, leads to economic growth, something they wanted, integration with the West, sure they wanted that, but there was a little bit of a Faustian bargain that played out over two decades as Germany and France ran this union and did it with their own political instincts and inclinations as the top priority, not raising the quality of life for those coming out of communism, but creating a monetary Ponzi scheme that fed German economic interests and French political philosophy. And so there's been this tension that's existed the last 10 years, and Central Europe has helped lead on that. And then after two terms of the Law and Justice Conservative government, they got turfed out, and Donald Tusk, who was the de facto head of the EU for a few years, his government got elected, and on a campaign of not kowtowing exactly to the EU, and that's exactly what he did. So there's a pendulum shift back toward this conservative nationalist ethos that we've seen in Hungary, that we've seen rising with Brexit, that we've seen in the U.S. with Trump, that nationalism is not a dirty word. Nationalism does not equal fascism by default, as the left-wing think tank media elite would have you believe. And so this is very, very positive, and they threw the kitchen sink at this candidate. And by the way, the pronunciation, Nawrocki. And the funny thing is, he's a former amateur and almost professional boxer, obviously a big Rocky fan, so that was factoring very, very largely in his campaign, that this was a man of the people. He was from the hinterlands. He became a historian. He was not a career politician. But this is a very, very positive development. And even though the EU and all of the global media threw the kitchen sink at this, he still narrowly eked out a campaign. They even went so far as to take away the public funding of really the largest party in the country. Law and Justice in the last election was the largest vote getter individually with 37-38% of the vote, but two-thirds of the country voted against continuing that because it got a little ossified after two terms. So without public funding, which is a big part of the most European countries' mechanisms of politics, the largest parties, once they make it into parliament, do get public funding. Without that public funding, he still was able to get 51% to Trzaskowski, the liberal Warsaw mayor, his 49%. So it's very big news in Europe. The EU is not happy. Trump and this admin did play a role. Kristi Noem came to CPAC Poland. She endorsed. I was there. I spoke right before Nawrocki. The energy was palpable. Certainly there was a mandate from those who want to see government serve those of their nation state. Poland first, Poland for Poles. Same as we saw in Romania, unfortunately, George Simeon did not eke out that election with all the institutional forces against him. But it's a big day for Poland, and it's a big day for those on the right globally, as well as in Europe, where the EU continues to run roughshod over individual rights of sovereign nations.
And I'm speaking with Matt Tiermand, who is a journalist and political strategist. You can follow him on X at Matthew Tiermand, which is T-Y-R-M-A-N-D. And so what are the potential ramifications for Poland's position on EU policies? I mean, like Ukraine's ascension or migration and also the Green Deal. And it's essentially, I mean, this is reshaping a lot of how at least the people are rising up to say, you know, we want different policies than what the elites have been foisting for the last several decades.
Well, as I told Fox News, Donald Tusk, who is made fun of a lot in Poland by the center and the right as sort of a stooge of Berlin and Germany, he's been ready, willing, able, and pliant to whatever they want. You know, he ran on in rebuilding the leftists. They call themselves center-right, but really I joke that the only thing center-right about them is the side of the road their taxpayer-supplied chauffeurs drive them on. They're hard left. whether it's, you know, social issues, LGBT and abortion, whether it's economic issues, integrate into Europe more than focus on Polish sovereign interests, including Poland's economic interests, which Poland is coming out of communism, and it is one of the most heavily utilizing nations for coal energy. Meanwhile, the EU has been at war and is signed on to COP25, every green initiative. Well, Poles don't want that, and the Polish right doesn't want that. The biggest issue, of course, and this is what catalyzed a move to the right in Europe and Central Europe, was borders and open borders, third world migration, which the EU, led by Germany, wants. Poles have voted time and again against it. And Nawrocki said quite simply that, you know, we are going to stand by that. And Poland is for Poles. He wants to see, instead of, you know, migrant integration centers, he wants to see deportation centers in Europe. And certainly Poland will work to lead the way on that. When it comes to Ukraine, this is the one thing, and this is something you and I have talked about in the past, and a lot of Americans on the right don't understand. In Europe, that sits on the periphery of the Russian sphere, where they have invaded a country and created massive displacement and violence and death and chaos, and interfered with other elections and poisoned, you know, Russian citizens in exile on other sovereign territory. Nobody has any appetite to, you know, kowtow to a Russian program of splitting up Ukraine or anything like that. But on the flip side, they also don't want to see, and really this is pretty universal at this point, Ukraine in NATO or the EU. It is totally inappropriate. It is an escalation. Economically, it doesn't make sense. Ukraine is far away from being a ready member on merit of either body, whether it's their institutional development, whether it's the corruption that exists in their military and in their politics. There's no appetite for that. And Poles took in more Ukrainian refugees than any other country, 2 million plus. Many have not left. And I have to say, you know, being in Poland a bunch of times, it's getting a little long in the tooth. So there's certainly a willingness to aid Ukraine and Ukrainians who have faced down, you know, the horror that is Russian invasion and mass murder. But there's not exactly a will to say, okay, well, you're going to just join us in everything we do when it comes to Western integration. It just doesn't make sense. So there's a very strong realpolitik there. When it comes to, you know, the integral issues that concern Poland, especially in its relations with the West, it's economics and its military alignment. And Poland has been one of the largest NATO participants for 20 years and is now really on a percentage of GDP basis the largest. They're moving toward 5% of GDP, up from 2 and then up from 3. They're at 3 plus now percent of GDP. They're the NATO peripheral border. You have Romania, you've got the Baltics. But Poland's the largest, and it's where there is the most at risk of Russian incursion if there was a breach of the NATO border. So having this this head of state who is aligned with Trump administration and the global right strengthens a lot of the prerogatives that exist between the two, the military alignment. Kristi Noem came. It's more than a little symbolic, as she's head of DHS, which to a European parliamentary system where you have ministers would be similar to the interior minister. And that's somebody that's a competence that looks at the things like the border guard, just like DHS. So her coming, her meeting with Nawrocki, her endorsing, very, very positive, probably helped swing it. You know, one of the worries was who would be better for Poland and Polish citizenry in terms of alignment with the West and specifically the U.S. And on military and economics, the right-wing candidate, certainly. And that came across, and I think that really did help win. Also keep in mind, Poland's diaspora is massively present in the United States. Everybody knows about Poles in Chicago and New York. But there's 20 million Poles in the global diaspora of a country of 40 million, and it's really centered in the U.S. Americans vote. I voted in the Polish election in Chicago a few weeks ago in the first round. So, you know, it really matters, Polish-U.S. relations. And so the Trump admin standing with Nawrocki, offering him a meeting with Trump in the Oval Office a few weeks ago, this helped. And I really think that probably made the difference. That was the delta that swung this very tight election with all institutional force against the right and very, very coercive forces, corrupt forces from the EU and the current Polish Tusk government. So it's a very, very good situation right now. Hopefully when there's an election in terms of the parliamentary, the government will shift back to the right as well. This presages that with some decent conviction.
Yeah. And Matt, really appreciate it. We only have about a minute left, but how could this like broader trend of nationalist movements in Europe shape future elections in the region, not just in Poland, but, you know, overall in the EU?
Well, it's, you know, it's happening. These things, you know, the EU was a 50-year project and it trended toward growth and into integration. They call it harmonization and cohesion for 4 to 5 decades. Brexit was the inflection point in 2016. We're 9 years into this. It's not quite unwinding. If there were to be a continued unwinding of the EU, my guess would be it would be in Italy next. Instead of Brexit, you'd have, you know, what we jokingly call Quiddily, who has. Italy now has moved to the right pretty dramatically. Giorgia Meloni is a right-wing conservative sovereigntist. Much like Navrovsky is, much like the previous Law and Justice government is. Hungary has been a bulwark and has stayed and maintained its right-wing political structure for the better part of 10, 12 years. It's ebbs and flows. Germany, AfD, has been gaining support. They're arguably the second biggest party now. 3 years ago, and I covered this, I was in Stockholm, Swedish Democrats became the kingmakers in the election, so lefty Sweden even moved to the right. France, you have Marine Le Pen, and you saw the government's now trying to jail her for a process crime that every party is supposedly guilty of.
Insane.
And it's quite nonsense. She'll appeal, and she will get continued support.
Matt,
so it's happening all over Europe.
That's great. Well, thanks so much. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.